Hello, everybody, and welcome to season two of Magic FM. I'm Gabby Sparks, one of your hosts today, and I'm joined by Mashi Scanlon. As always, Mashi, welcome to season two of Magic FM, baby, episode 53.
Should it be three or like 2.1? 53 or 2.1?
53, episode 53. Oh, man. So the way it works on Buzzsprout, which is the service that hosts our thing, you can choose the season and then just keep ticking up the episodes. So I think it's just going to be season two, episode 53.
That makes the most sense. So, you know what's crazy is realizing that we only took a week off for 1 year straight.
I know. I was really proud of us.
Episodes I wasn't there for that you weren't there for. Some I had to leave partway through.
Yeah, I remember the Chion episode. There were two episodes that you and Luis covered for me when I was in Ecuador. Yeah. But like overall, we just had an entire basically year of episodes, which is really cool.
That's crazy. I'm proud of us.
I was really proud of us too. I was I'm patting myself on the back.
No, totally. We were having dinner tonight. And I was like, well, this is it. This is 53. And then it hit me. I was like, we only took one week off, and it was, you know, obviously we've joked about it. Ironically, it's the one time we've been together that we can actually record in the same room. We took a week off, but so 53, season two, here we come. It's pretty awesome. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am excited because Innistrad has been back on Magic Online. And if you didn't, I know, spooky. If you haven't drafted Innistrad, I would so recommend you draft it. It's available on Magic Online for a week. They've been doing this as a tradition for the last 5 years or so. It's always up for just 1 week. And Innistrad is one of the best drafting sets of all time. So if you have never had a chance to do it, I would highly recommend it. It's been really fun. Plus, it's Halloween this weekend. I've been doing a thing called Spookython leading up to Halloween. We've been playing, I know, Spookython. It's been...
Oh, no, I saw this on your stream. I'm sorry. I thought you meant at home with the mild Nikotle.
No. This is for our stream. It's like a week of scary streams. So I've been playing like horror games and stuff like that. I played a ghost hunting game with a bunch of other streamers yesterday called Phasmophobia. Like you go around like a ghost hunter. You have to like figure out what kind of ghost it is based on like the readings that you get and stuff. It's really fun.
Oh, wow. Well,
how about you, Mush?
Not much going on here. We did a box break.
That was fun. I enjoyed watching that. Yeah.
I was before we went live, I was telling Gabby, man, I have a whole new respect for having to go flat out for like three and a half hours. But it just feels like it's flat out, even though we took breaks here and there. And I got home and I was just wiped out, just completely wiped out. We wrapped at, I think, 6:45, and I was home, had dinner and in bed asleep by 10.
You're like, time to veg.
Was done.
I couldn't do anymore. That I think one of the tough things with streaming that people don't realize, because obviously streaming has a lot of really fun aspects to it, is that you have a camera on you the entire time. And so you do have to, like, there's a difference between it's time to play a game and I'm going to veg out. And then, I mean, you can't see this if you're listening to the podcast, but if you're watching the video, you just like lay back and you're just like, oh, I'm just going to chill here and I've got my Cheetos ready, you know? There's a difference between doing that and like sitting up for a stream and being like, you know, I'm going to like play this game and there's going to be a camera on me and I'm going to be on this podcast, for example.
And I want to talk to people, right? We couldn't see the chat, which we're going to remedy next time.
Yeah.
But like, just like trying to be on, trying to engage, trying to make sure people are interested, you know, because if I did a stream and I'm just playing Magic, it's going to be a lot of, I'm just going to take 5. There's going to be a lot of that, right? Just randomly saying stuff like that. And that's about it, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a new experience. It was actually pretty exciting. Once we got into it, it was pretty exciting.
It was so cool. I love the stream. It's funny. I saw a bunch of the people who were just like on all the Magic streams. Some of them are on my stream too. It was just cool to see them there because people were just, for those who didn't see it, a box break is when you basically crack an entire box. These were collector's boosters. Is that what they were?
We did Zendikar Rising set boosters. Yeah. Then we did Iconic Masters, Masters 25, and then we did one pack of the Dark, 5 packs of Urza's Saga, and then I think Zendikar Rising collector's boosters.
Yeah, that's really sweet. Part of the appeal of it too is you just get to see like cool cards get open, which is like I get a rush out of looking at that. Like I remember when I was pretty new to Magic, I used to go on YouTube and watch people open really old packs, like those like alpha, like you, the person's opening it with gloves and stuff, which apparently is not even like a good idea. Apparently it's not even a good idea is what I've been told.
Oh, really? I have no idea.
At the beta draft in Vegas, everybody started out with gloves, and then eventually they took gloves off because the gloves were making it so that like you were mishandling the cards more than... I don't remember exactly, but the end result is people weren't using gloves at the end.
I have no idea. It was a weird experience for me. I took a break from Magic kind of towards the end of high school. It was right towards the end of Tempest block going into Urza's block. And so Saga and I don't know if Legacy was out yet. Saga and Destiny were out. And those were packs on the shelf that you'd buy at the game stores. And so that was kind of like me coming back to Magic. And I haven't opened a pack of Urza Saga in, no joke, like 20 years. And so it was weird opening.
That's so cool, though.
It was a great experience. It was really, really great. Yeah. I just remember, I think the first card I opened when I came back was a Shivan Hellkite, if I remember correctly. So, you know, there's little things you remember like that. So it was a lot of fun doing a stream with John, because it was really just John and I. Like, we talk about...
I like that it was very much just stuff. Like... chilling. It just was like chilling with you guys, which I thought was really cool. Yeah. Definitely could make the audio better. I think that's going to be one of the things to fix for next time.
But I think maybe lav mics or something, but yeah.
Yeah, I think lav mics would have helped. Basically, I think the mic was just not good enough to pick both of you up at the same time. But I hope you guys do more of those. Those were really fun. I think people really enjoyed them.
It was good. So what did you, Gabby, this is our standard Magic FM question. We got to keep the traditions alive even in season two. What was for dinner tonight?
We ordered Chinese, this place that was just an A+. It was really, really good. They had these like grilled or like pan fried string beans, which I know doesn't sound exciting, but it was amazing.
No, string beans are a regular. Sometimes they like Szechuan string beans.
Yes, that's what they were. They were incredible. They put like
brown pork in it or something sometimes. It's...
They have pieces of hot chili oil in it. I don't know. They were so good. So not calzones. How about you?
Yeah. What do we have? Oh, we had shabu shabu.
Sounds really good.
Have you had shabu shabu? I've had shabu shabu. We get it all the time. It was one of my favorite things when I was a kid. And we went pretty deep on it because Lane liked it. For a while, I would stop by the Japanese grocery store. We would have it like once a week.
Oh my God. So we'd slow down.
We slowed down a bit. Yeah. And it's, you know, you can get healthy with it. You got to watch the sauces, but it's just boiled meat and vegetables.
Right. It's pretty healthy overall. There's a shabu shabu place we liked going to here, but it's COVID now. So we haven't really
You can't do it.
Can't really do it. I'm sure you can get it to go, but it just sounds less appealing. It's kind of like Korean barbecue. Like it's fun to do it there, you know?
Yeah. You can't. There are places here that are doing it, Korean barbecue. And I was like, yeah, no, I can't.
It's a little too sketchy for me.
Yeah, like maybe if it was just Elaine and I outside at a table, but like that's a group dining thing. Like, because when we closed on the warehouse here in Santa Clara, I was like, hey, everyone who was still here who didn't make the move to Henderson, I said, hey, I want to take everyone out to a nice dinner. And the first thing they picked was like Korean barbecue, which like, if that's what you really want, okay. But I meant like, you know, you can pick anything. It's fine, you know. And then I looked at Korean barbecue. I was like, wait a minute, we can't all be eating off the same grill. Like, no, we're not doing Korean barbecue.
Yeah, that's a little sketchy for sure.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a thing in Chicago, but speaking of Chinese food, and I guess maybe calzones, do you know what a Peking ravioli is? Mm-mm.
Is it ravioli?
I learned this in law school. At BU, because the place across you from us served Peking. It's a Chinese place. Then they had really, really good Peking raviolis.
What are they?
Pot stickers.
Really? Are they made of duck? Is it like Peking duck? Because that's what I associated to. Huh.
Yeah, same. It's just, I think, you know, in Boston, maybe because there's a huge Italian American population, they're like, how do we communicate what this is like? Well, it's kind of like a ravioli and it's from China. We'll call it a Peking ravioli.
That's really and so funny. Peking,
and I remember the first, I got it because I was like, oh my God, this sounds so crazy. I thought it was going to be a duck.
And you got pot stickers?
And I got pot stickers.
That's really funny.
And I was
funny.
Like, what? These are just freaking pot stickers, you guys. They were really good though. The place, I can't remember the name of the place right now, across from you. There are many, many nights I had left the law library, got an order of Peking
raviolis.
Just jamming
those raviolis.
Came back.
Yeah, I love it. That's really good.
But yeah, I didn't know. It could have been a Chicago thing. I don't know. So.
I've never seen that there. That's so cool, though. That sounds delicious.
Yeah. It's weird, weird regional thing there. So, all right, should we get jamming?
Yeah, we do. We have a lot to talk about today. But before we get there, I wanted to do a shout out for the sponsor of the podcast, channelfireball.com. I wanted to shout out something that I feel like we just kind of take for granted and we always glaze over it, but I think it's a really cool offering. And so I wanted to make sure we could highlight it one of these weeks, and that's CFB Pro, just generally CFB Pro. If you are not familiar with it, it's a subscription service that gives you access to the best magic content out there. All members of Team CFB are making awesome content there. Plus, we have a lot of new limited writers. And I don't know if people are aware of that. They're really incredible. The Lords of Limited dudes, so Mr. Metronome and Ethan Sachs. And I just realized that I caught one of them by their online handle, one of them by their real name. Ethan Sachs, aka Lord Tupperware, or Ben Wernie, aka Mr. Metronome. There you go. From Lords of Limited, who do awesome content for Channel Fireball. And also Alex Nikolic, which if you haven't read his content, it's incredible. Like, he's very good at limited theory. He's all limited all the time. So
yeah,
all these guys stream. They make awesome content. You can get it all on CFB Pro. Plus, there's a lot of benefits to CFB Pro. Additionally, there's the CFB Pro Showdown, which we've talked about a bunch. I'm sure that's going to be our shout out next week. And there's also a CFB Pro Discord. So if you want to talk about other people who also want to, you know, they're tuning decks or they're trying to figure out what to play that weekend, that's a great place to hang out and be in the magic conversation. So
one of the other things that's starting to ramp up with CFB Pro is sneak peek offers. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things that we offer, you know, kind of, they're going to go live on Monday. We'll send an email out, an exclusive email out to CFB Pro, you know, buy through the email, get first dibs at it before things sell out. And we did that with some Flesh and Blood stuff. We did that with Pokemon. We did that with the box breaks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw a bunch of people who were like, oh my God, the box break sounded so cool. I wanted to buy into it. The way you buy into the box break is you buy a color basically from when it gets broken. And a bunch of people were like, God, I got to remember to check the CFB Pro email, which is a specific. Yep. And Eric Levine, who sends those emails and was in the stream when he was saying this, he's like, yeah, you should definitely open it because I may or may not care about whether or not you open this email.
He reports on the open rate all the time. Click-through rate. Click-through is even better. If you really want to do them solid, have open and click through it. Yeah. But yeah, and that's been... We've gotten a lot of great feedback there. And the final thing I'll say about CFB Pro itself is the biggest piece of feedback we got right when we launched was more limited, more limited, more limited. And getting Ben and Ethan and Alex has been a godsend. You said it's the best magic content on the internet. I really believe that, but I also have my thumb on the scale because I get to ask a lot of like James and Jess, like, wouldn't it be great if we had like limited deck guys for limited archetypes, and then boom, for Zendikar Rising, we got it. Cause that's, you know, so I get to ask a lot about, hey, I think this would be popular because I don't know, I want to read it. And so I genuinely read it all day, every day. So I recommend it. CFB Pro, you touched on it. We'll touch on it again next week. But for those who don't know, we have a new producer for the CFB Pro show.
Oh my God. Yes.
For next week. It's going to be awesome. Gabby's going to be a producer.
I'm going to be our producer for the next CFB Pro Showdown. So that's next weekend. And I am very excited about the opportunity and also slightly nervous about the whole thing because it's just, you know, it's not easy. Oh,
you're so humble. It's going to be fine. I know when... I don't know. You're good at acknowledging when you're like, hey, because we had a whole conversation like, do we need to get more help? Like, no, I think it's going to be fine, but I'm nervous. I'm like, oh, we're on lock. So I feel good.
I'm very excited. I think it's like, it's such a cool thing. And I love the Pro Showdown. Like, one of my favorite things that we've worked on, that I've worked on with CFB is just like the bounties and stuff for the Pro Showdown and advertising it. And so getting to actually like run it behind the scenes is going to be really cool. So I am very excited and it's going to be happening next week. So please tune in because...
Yeah. Check it out.
I would really appreciate that.
Yeah. So, and it's free. It's free with CFB Pro. That's why it comes up here. It's,
yeah, totally.
You join CFB Pro. CFB Pro Showdown is free. So check it out.
Our theme for this month. Oh, yes. That's right. If you are signing up to CFB Pro or buying anything on CFB or buying CFB Pro or anything else that requires a spot where you can check out, you can use the code MAGICFM. That supports this podcast. That supports both Mashi and I and all the content we make on here. So if you want to send some love and show some support to Magic Fun, you can absolutely, do that. All right. So we have a lot of stuff that happened this week. There was actually something huge that happened today. In fact,
like hours ago.
Hours ago, yeah. I got punished for not procrastinating because I had actually written show notes for Magic FM this morning. And yes, and then I just like threw a bunch of them out because this other thing happened and it was like, well, never mind. This is the news story. This is the big story. So a card got previewed today. If you haven't heard about the card, it's called Jeweled Lotus. It has some of the most beautiful art I've ever seen in a card. It is truly like amazing. It's really astounding. And if you were like, huh, Lotus, that's interesting. I know another card called Lotus called Black Lotus. I wonder what this Jeweled Lotus does. Let me read you the card. It's an artifact that costs 0 mana. Sound familiar? I wonder where we've seen this before. Sacrifice Jeweled Lotus, add 3 mana of any one color, spend this mana only to cast your commander. End of text. That's the card. All right, Mosh. This has created a lot of discourse in the Magic community today. In fact, it's still going. If you go on Twitter right now, everyone's yelling to each other.
It's happening currently. One thing I'm going to say is when you look at this art, Alana Danner, she's awesome. She's been to a lot of Magic Fest. She's a wonderful person just to talk to and a great artist. This art is gorgeous. And it's this jeweled lotus that's kind of like the light is refracting. English, Mosh. Refracting. And so it's like rainbow in hue and in color, right? And so I'm going to say flavor fail. These 3 mana, they shouldn't be all one color. So right off the bat.
Wow, the hottest take I've heard from a Jeweled Lotus so far.
Right off the bat, flavor fail. It should be 3 mana, color of your choosing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everyone is upset about it. It would be totally fine.
Well, you make a good point. It is like every petal is a crystal. So it's like a prism. It's like if you were refracting light off of a prism, that's what you can see in the Jeweled Lotus art. So Mosh is not wrong. It is. It's accurate. It's a rainbow colored and it doesn't actually produce rainbow mana. Not really. So I want to hear this, Mashi. I think everybody had an impression of this card when they first saw it, like your gut reaction, right? And then the like, hey, I've talked to other people. I've had some time to digest the idea of this card and this is what I think about it now. So I want to hear both what your like gut reaction when you saw this card and you were like, I think X about this card. And then also, hey, now I've talked to other people and maybe my opinion changed. Or maybe my initial impression is exactly the same way I feel about it.
So our cards on the table, I am not a Commander player. I played one game of Commander my whole life. That's it. So, this is a complete outsider perspective, you know. But I will tell you, I saw it. I was like, holy crap, that's awesome. It's a freaking Lotus. You know, Magic, and there's so many sets like Nyx Lotus. There's so many Lotuses out there, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many Lotus variants. And this one made sense to me, and I thought it was great. It's a very narrow Lotus. All joking aside, one color does narrow it in Commander, where you often, for your Commander, need mana of multiple colors, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it's amazing. It's an amazing Lotus, and it looks awesome. Hey, worst case scenario, it could be a proxy for a Black Lotus. Who knows? So I just think that there's a lot going for it. And my first instinct was like, this thing is awesome and great. So how about you? What was your first instinct?
So my first instinct was, wow, this art is incredible. That's actually the first thing I thought of when I saw the card. I really love it. I would want to get a print of this card, you know, like that's how much I think it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. My gut when I saw it is like, oh my God, why did they print this card? Like just when I saw it, it felt so... it looked so powerful to me just on first impression. When I was trying to digest it, it felt like, wow, this card is too good. Why would they print this card? Like that was just the reaction I had. And so initially it's not a great reaction. It just was like, oh my God, are we having like Omnath Oko again? I know it'd never be like that because this is for a different set, a multiplayer commander set. So I know there's not going to be like an Oko that's your commander. This isn't like Brawl where your commander's always going to be Oko and it's going to warp the format and totally destroy it. But I did look at it and think like, oh, wow, this card is too powerful. Why did they do that? Now, after talking to people, specifically my friends who are game designers, whose opinion I respect and value a lot, especially because this is what they do professionally, right? They have to have some idea what they're talking about. I no longer feel that way about Jeweled Lotus, but I did have that visceral like, Like it really just felt like,
wow.
Yeah. I just had a really negative impression when I first saw it.
My immediate thought was it was awesome. And then kind of I think anyone who's going to look at this that plays Magic is going to go, wait a minute. This does feel like dangerous territory. But kind of the immediate thought I had is, you know, Sol Ring's legal in this format. Mana Crypt is legal in this format. Mana Vault, I believe, is legal in this format. Maybe I'm drastically underrating the effects of this card, but that, because I did say, like, oh my God, are we in the danger zone here? Once I got over the how cool it was. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no. I mean, Sol Ring, Mana Vault, I don't even, in Mana Crypt, they I don't know if they're one ofs in every commander deck, but mm-hmm. it seems like they're just insanely powerful. And in a format where you have that kind of access to that kind of fast mana, this one, which is more narrow, like turn 5, what do you want to top deck? A Sol Ring or a Jeweled Lotus? Turn 10. You know, what do you want to top deck? I mean, you don't really don't want to top deck either one, to be honest. Yeah. With you, but you know, so I just thought, I think it's probably okay. I don't know.
Yeah. So if you follow Magic Twitter, or Magic Reddit or whatever, there's a lot of people who are pretty mad about the, a lot of people who are basically, I think, overrating the card. Like it looks too good. Kind mm-hmm. of the same impression I had initially. And then there's also a lot of people who are saying, hey, this card's actually not even an auto. Like, I think a lot of people were taking offense, saying like, hey, is this like the kind of card that you need to have in your commander deck? And if you don't have it in your commander deck, it's a feel bad. And a lot of people were like, no, this is just not even that good of a top deck later in the game. And also, if you're playing a multiplayer commander format, once you're on that table with a bunch of people, like it kind of self-corrects in some way. In a lot mm-hmm. of those games, when somebody starts running away with a game, people dogpile. They're like, nah, you can't, you know, like we're having a nice game of Commander and you're running ahead with it. We're going to make sure that you get farther behind and not just win the game instantly. So I thought there was a really cool take, really interesting take by Patrick Chapin, who is a game designer. Hall of Famer. And he said, unpopular opinion maybe, but I think Jeweled Lotus looks like an awesome design. Power level wise, from what I've seen, people are overrating it, and I don't think it's even necessarily an automatic include. If Black Lotus was 99% cheaper, I'm not even sure it'd be banned. It'd need to be banned. Have you actually played Black Lotus in a multiplayer much? It doesn't scale all that well, with the exception of combo loops, which this design avoids. Think about how unreal Dark Ritual is. Now consider how strong Dark Ritual is in Commander. Whoever designed this card is a genius. Jeweled Lotus is probably on my all-time favorite list for best Magic designs. Also, with regards to power level, obviously competitive two-player is different animal, but that format is a different animal anyway.
Yeah. I think that.
What do you think about that?
That all makes sense. Like, and this is all, you know, the narrowing of the narrowing application of the Lotus seems to be, if that's enough to hem it in, then everything Patrick says is right. The one thing that could be incorrect is if the commander, and I'm not savvy with commander, I don't know what the decks are, if there is a commander that is essential to, to a combo piece, and has recursion power from the graveyard. Like, what's his face? That elf that gets played in Historic. The green-black elf. Doesn't he give you access to the graveyard?
Because, like, if you have a way to recur stuff from the... elf that gives you access to the... Is Zoni? That's a legend. I don't know what it does.
I can't remember his name. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Because even if you get the Lotus back, all you can do is, like, increase your storm count. Leovold. I think I'm thinking of
Leovold.
Does he give access to the graveyard?
No, he doesn't.
What am I thinking? I don't know. Anyway, but the thing is, the fact that you can only bring it back and then use it for commander, it feels like, you know, it's safe. Where's your head at with it?
I really like Patrick's take. It was actually this that made me change my mind on it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I was also talking to some of my friends here. And people were basically saying, like, hey, everybody's out there with a pitchfork complaining about the power level of this card, saying, like, this is going to lead to a lot of non-games. But just multiplayer Magic just plays really differently. Then I was also talking to Luis and Raptor. Luis said that I could literally quote him on this, that he totally 100% agrees with Patrick's take. And he thinks that this card is a great design. You know, I really respect.
Wow.
Uh-huh. and Raptor, who's also a game designer. All my friends are game designers. He thought that one of the cool things about this card is that it actually replicates the experience of opening a Black Lotus that you can use to cast your commander, especially if you're playing like Commander Legends, like the actual limited format, which he said is like a pretty magical experience and really hard to recreate, which makes him think that the design is fantastic. So that, all of that changed my mind to like, huh, interesting. This isn't like, the thing that Patrick says is true. This doesn't break, because if it, all you're doing is casting your commander, you're not going to be using it to like draft a degenerate storm deck, and your commander deck is not going to be like that good. And yes, it's true, it might not even be an auto include because a bunch of decks might not even need it. Like, I actually think that this lets you cast a higher costed commander when most things in commander really tend to reward you for like doing cheaper stuff. Like, the really expensive spells are really hard to cast, and the expensive commanders are also hard to cast, because you know they get taxed, commander taxed, when they come back,
right? Which just helps with Kethis, by the way, is who I was thinking of, sorry.
And this is a legendary artifact. Yes,
it's weird, this is not a legendary artifact. You don't need to make it legendary because it's commander,
right? It's commander. You just that's funny,
which is kind of funny. So yeah, it's no good with Kethis. I mean, I think that, so the counterpoint, there's a counterpoint here from, or not counterpoint, because they weren't really.
Yeah, it wasn't like a conversation, but.
Yeah. But one of the other point of views came from April King at Cube April. And I think this point is actually pretty legit, which is for 10% of games, this was, I'm paraphrasing, there's more to this tweet. For 10% of the games, this will result in a huge blowout. And in the other 90%, you'll be disappointed that you drew it. What exactly is the upside of this card, drawing it on turn three to power out a six drop? You know, so I think she's got a good point where when this card hits, and April plays, she's very big in Commander. She plays a lot of Commander.
Yeah, very big into Cube, very big into Commander.
Yes. When this card hits, it could be like pretty devastating. It could really result, if the stars line up, you could see this resulting in very, very poor gameplay experience, right? But then again, you kind of say, well, was the person's deck designed for that? Because maybe that's not what you want at your commander table. Okay, let's set that aside for a second. The flip side of that being, well, hey, it's not that powerful because guess what? When you draw it later in the game, it's not that great. Does create a poor play experience with the card. Now, that's part of how you balance the card out. So that's called balance, and that's how we incorporated the card design, and that's okay. But it does beg the question, why make the card if that's the case?
Which actually is a very nice segue into the next thing I wanted to say about the card. And it's that I think a lot of the complaints that people are having about this card are gameplay related. And in fact, right now we were talking like, we're waiting for the podcast, that Commander podcast, that in a few months are going to be saying like, this is just not a card you should be including in your deck that often unless you're this kind of deck, which would be interesting. The thing I don't like about it, like now that I've had time to digest the card, is to me, this seems like this is why the card got printed. Just wanting to print money, basically. And it kind of ties into a lot of other things that we've been, just a trend that we've been seeing over the last year of paying attention to Magic and following the news and doing this podcast, which is Wizards has just been doing a lot of things lately that feel very directly tied to just increasing revenue.
As their business.
Their business. And I have absolutely no problem with that. I just don't like when there seems to be decisions that are guiding things that could eventually lead to poor format health, or really what we saw with Secret Lair, which was, to be totally honest, a complete shit show. Because Wizards started selling cards B2C.
B2C.
And like business to consumer, for those who maybe are not familiar with that terminology.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I know. I use it so much, Mashi, that I get used to it. But
Same.
But that was just not something that we ever saw Wizards do before. And we've seen a lot of the complaints that people have because they're basically printing cards and selling them to consumers, which is not something that Wizards has ever really done before. And in some ways, to me, this Lotus feels similar. Like, oh, we just wanted to print money, so we just made a Black Lotus variant.
So they've made so many Black Lotus variants.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And there's every set has chase cards.
Yeah,
they design that. That's one of the marketings for Magic, and I agree with you. There's this feel to it. Many, and when I finish this story, you will understand. Yes, many years ago, Channel Fireball president and CEO John Sasso and I used to talk about the signs of the magic apocalypse. It's one of the things we talk about all the time. Like, so number one is Wizards breaks the reserve list.
Yes, right? that would definitely be a sign.
we know to, you know, if Wizards ever decided they were going to reprint those cards, they are literally printing money.
Yeah.
Right. That and our take on that was, okay, they are so desperate that they would do that. But that's also kind of in the impossible.
Feels very much like emergency case, like break into the piggy bank. That's what it would be.
Dire emergency. Like, okay, we're about, okay, sign the bankruptcy form or sign the cancel reserve list form. That's like basically what it is, right? One of the other signs that we used to say all the time, signs of the magic apocalypse, if they ever printed opposing color fetches, that was something that we used to say.
Wow. Boy, how long ago was this? Ever,
this is a long time ago.
Much as I got the risk of dating myself.
It was probably like Mirrodin, Champions era. We were like, yeah. Because Champions troughed out. Champions did not sell well. Kamigawa Block was not a popular set at all. Amazing flavor. Gameplay mechanics were not great. I actually really, really, you know, Luis did really, really well with that freaking Gifts Ungiven and Hanakami nonsense BS deck. That was just his kind of deck. It totally was. And he was brilliant with it. Chion played that, if I recall correctly. Brent, like everyone in the area was playing. Ocho.
Yeah.
But the set didn't sell well. And so there's kind of idea of like, how are they going to rebound from it? What's going to happen? And we started talking about how do we know when they're just printing money? And back then, what we thought was if they ever actually put, you know, enemy fetches out, that would be a sign that things were really struggling. And that, and by the way, things were really bad in Shards Block, and Zendikar Block changed it all around. Like the game kind of came back and revenue went up. So we weren't all that wrong. But my point is we do see these things and fixate on these things sometimes on the back end and think, boy, they would never do this. And they do this. Lotus variants are super common. This one is, I mean, of all the Lotus variants we've ever seen, because there was a Suspend Lotus too, right?
Yeah, the Suspend Lotus wasn't all that good. Nyx Lotus wasn't all that good.
Not that good. They've done all the Mox variants they've made. Those have hit way, way, way more than the Lotus variants, right? None of the Lotus variants have ever really been that good. The 5-mana one that you know you could tap, that one saw some play in combo.
Isn't it just
5-mana? Tap to add 3-mana of any color to your mana pool.
Oh, Gilded Lotus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that saw play in
something. And it gets play in Commander and Cube and stuff.
No, I think I might have been in a competitive deck at some point. I don't know.
I did not play competitive Magic back then, so I have no idea.
But this one is skirting. It just, how much of it, and this is both of our reactions, both of our process. How much of our instinct on this card, I keep looking over here because the art for the card is right here. How much of our instinct on this card is built on that kind of like lizard brain gut reaction?
It's
so similar. It feels so much like a Black Lotus. More than anything they've ever printed, this feels like a Black Lotus, doesn't it?
It's funny because we that's one of the things we were just talking about right now at dinner. And it's that the original Black Lotus anchors your expectations. So whenever you see something that looks similar to a Black Lotus, you're like, like gasp for air.
Yeah.
It just seems like, oh, what a mistake. This thing is so similar to Black Lotus. Clearly that one was so wrong back in the day. And that's actually interesting to what Patrick's saying in his tweet is, I'm not even sure that Black Lotus would need to be banned if it were 99. Like right now, people don't really play it because it's a card that's inaccessible, right? It's just so expensive. But he's saying, I don't even know how much you'd even want this card if it were cheaper, like if the accessibility weren't the thing that was gating.
I don't buy that.
I think Patrick's a brilliant designer. So I think, you know, like I haven't really taken too long to think about that thing. There's could be right, could be wrong. I don't know. But it is funny that I see this and I totally agree with that's kind of the reaction that it was a lizard brain reaction, 100%. Mm-hmm. I saw a Black Lotus that looked a lot like a normal Black Lotus and I was like, I just had this. I know, no. It scared me.
it's down that path of madness. I will say Patrick is a brilliant game designer. There's no question of that. If you just interact with him. So he's kind of on that weird level where you're like, yeah, you're really smart. But then sometimes like that smartness makes you, I don't want to say he's awkward, but just like out there, you know?
Yes. He often has like out there takes and stuff, but he just, I don't know. He knows what he's talking about. So when he says something like that, like, hey, I think maybe Black Lotus wouldn't even be that big of a problem if it were more accessible. It makes me stop and think like, huh, let me reconsider the assumptions I'm making here, because I think there must be some reason to why he thinks this.
But Patrick is also given to hyperbole. I just want to get that out there too. He is not afraid of like, that forcefully is overstating his case.
Repeatedly. To make a point. Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, okay, you know, because I do think he's got a point here. And he's like, and by the way, even if Black Lotus was legal or what, you know, when it was accessible, it probably wouldn't see play. It's like, well, I don't know about that.
I did see a couple of funny takes that were basically like, you all just want a reason to be mad. Like, that was just a tweet. It got quote tweeted so much. Because I do think that part of it is true. Is people just like want, I don't know, people I think are bored at quarantine and at home, and people just want reasons to complain.
And I mean, you know, I don't want to derail us into politics, but it's a tense time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of frustration and stuff going around anyway. And so sometimes it finds that path of least resistance, mm-hmm. you know?
It does feel like sometimes just, I don't know. Complaining about stuff is just more interesting than not complaining. So I think that's part of what happens. Like, this card comes out, and there's a ton of people who I follow who are really big into the Commander stuff who are saying, like, mm-hmm. this card is fine. You guys are complaining for no reason.
Yeah. It feels like it was like I said, that Lizardbrain reaction where it went crazy.
Yeah.
And then slowly people are like, actually, maybe it is okay. I'm not sure. So I think that's happening. My favorite take, by the way, I actually like stopped and laughed out loud. This is from Luis. Luis sometimes, man, he just, God, sometimes he has such great takes. He goes, Jeweled Lotus, huh? Is this how Commander players felt looking at me talking about Uro, Oko, Omnath?
That's really good. Oh my gosh, that's really good. That is really fantastic.
It really, you know... I'm sorry, Commander players, but this is the life we've been living in Standard for so long. And hopefully it's not even deserved. Hopefully everything's going to be fine. And you know, you get upset, you have your Oko, but it turns out, you know, it's not an Oko. It's a, you know, what was that? Philosodon?
Rampaging Philosodon did nothing wrong.
It's all fine.
Philosodon Innocence Project.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy, and it did powder keg up so quickly. Like, literally, this happened a few hours ago, and it's already like, whoosh, and then kind of started to like come back down.
It was wild, dude, because I'm not often like live and streaming the second some huge news breaks, because the odds of that happening is just not that likely, right? Because I'm not really looking at news or other stuff when I'm streaming. But I was live for like less than 2 minutes when I saw the card get previewed, and I was like, whoa, let's stop and look at this. And everyone's like, a lot of people saw it for the first time there too. And we were like, whoa, look at this Black Lotus. And then a bunch of people coming in like, oh my gosh, did you guys see the Black Lotus? Like, what do we think? But it was interesting to watch that all go down, because then I was paying attention to Twitter because I wanted to see what people were saying. And it was just one of those like, you know, like the dog with a burning building, like, this is fine, dog.
Oh, it's fine.
It was this just is fine. But it was actually fine. I think it actually is going to be fine. It was just funny to, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just sip. This is fine.
The other thing I think Commander players should really, really embrace, and I felt this way with the, and this is just me having talked, again, I don't play Commander, but talking to a lot of Commander players.
Yeah.
And this is how I felt about the Walking Dead stuff, is if it's a problem, you know, you don't need to be beholden to the rules committee. Just ban it at your kitchen table.
Yeah.
You know, come together. What does your group want to do? You know, and make those rules. And don't feel like, well, because it's legal, it's like, yeah, let's just play a stipulation. Like, let's just have fun. And if it's going to suck the fun out of it, or even if it's not, even if it's just overblown, but hey, it's Mashi, Gabby, Luis, and Raptor. And only Mashi has the Lotus, and Luis, Gabby, and Raptor don't have the money or the funds or the time or the wherewithal to acquire one. That's okay. Then just, and it creates a bad feeling. Get it out of there. Get it. It's your kitchen table. It's your group. Come together. Make the rules that are going to make it fun, that everyone's going to be happy with, that everyone's going to be comfortable with, and just do that. Like, that's You want to have fun. You don't want the drama. You don't want, you know, any of that. And I just think I'm really in favor of just doing that.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like there's a lot of commander groups who have their own kind of like mini ban list, independent of what the rules committee says, because guess what? Some groups don't want to play with Sol Ring, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Like some groups just don't want to play with Arcane Signet. That's fine. And I think ultimately, like, the experience of playing Commander is to play with your friends. It's to have fun. And if this card's not fun, you can just not play with it. It's different that when Oko is the best card in Standard, it's like, well, you know, is playing with Oko not fun? No. Well, play something else. Well, I can't, because literally every other strategy is just invalidated by Oko.
Completely invalidated.
Yeah. Exactly. Insane. So that is another one of the really nice benefits of Commander. And I think that is where this card kind of shines, where if your playgroup wants to play it, that's great. The only thing I really don't like is that because it is a mythic, it's a card that's less accessible to other players, that isn't really like super replaceable. Like, it's not like an example we were using earlier is playing Tropical Island versus Breeding Pool, where Tropical Island is obviously better, but you know, not everybody has money for a Tropical Island, so you play a Breeding Pool. This is closer to that, like, it's a little more gated, but end of the day, like, so are so many of the cards that you play in Commander, so it's not that big of a difference.
Just play a Lion's Eye Diamond.
Talking about Black Lotus variants, which is not...
That's true.
Yeah.
You know how we had to bust so many... We were like... We had all these bulk rare lots and stuff, and we had to bust so many of them because we had so many Lion's Eye Diamonds in there. Lion's Eye Diamond and Glimpse of Nature were huge bulk rares forever.
Really?
Forever. Bulk oh my God. Rares? Forever. Yeah.
Ellie, so expensive, dude. I recently tried to buy one from a cube and then I didn't because it was so expensive.
It's redonkulous.
Oh my gosh. Glimpse of Nature.
It was total junk. Glimpse of Nature, Luis won Berlin, and Glimpse of Nature shot up. Because it was a BS nothing card. Lion's Eye Diamond was, I mean, Madness hasn't been around for that. Okay, it's been around for a long time now. But not, it hasn't been around for that long, but it's been around, I guess, since Odyssey. You know, without effects like that, and it, back in the day, the graveyard was nowhere near as accessible as it is now, obviously. Yeah. So, LED was just a complete dud. It was like, I mean, it was such a joke. Like, this is what you had to do to make Black Lotus bad. This was trash.
Right. Like, discard your whole hand. Good. For those who don't know, it's a zero mana artifact. Discard your whole hand, makes 3 mana of any one color like Black Lotus does. But it often gets played with cards that have graveyard synergies because if you just bin your entire card or your entire hand and you have ways of casting stuff from the graveyard, like Yawgmoth's Will,
totally,
or like Past in Flames or anything like that, it just suddenly becomes 3 free mana. It is a Black Lotus, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a cube all star for that reason. It goes in like so many combo decks. It adds to storm count. It adds mana. You can cast it easily from the graveyard, that sort of thing.
So over under then, Gabby, on this, we can wrap here. Over under July 1st, 2021, for a rules committee commander banning for Jeweled Lotus.
Under. I don't think it's gonna happen.
Over. It won't get banned by then. You're saying it will not be banned before then.
Correct. So over. I don't think it will be banned.
I don't think it will ever get banned. So
yeah, I don't think so.
I'm saying over. I want to throw it out there long enough for it to actually see some play, but I don't think it's that. I don't think it's OP. I think it's going to be fine. People may not like it, you know, but I think it's going to be fine.
I am looking forward to, in like a month or two, talking to my Commander friends and just being like, ooh, what's going on in Commander? Is Jeweled Lotus too good? And I want to hear people's take on what they say. I am looking forward to doing that check-in. Kind of like how we do the check-in on the Secret Lair, and then we saw that Rick is actually getting play in Legacy, and we're like, lol, jokes on you.
That was so bad. Yeah, so bad.
So bad. I cast Rick.
Wow. Yeah, I'll Rick ya.
Yeah.
I'll Rick ya.
I'll Rick cast for real. Rick. I still can't get over that.
You've casted plenty of Bobs. You've casted, all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's sure not called Bob, dude. It's not called Bob. There's a difference between, I cast, you know, Avacyn, the Restored, or I don't even remember her titles anymore. The Archangel yeah. Avacyn.
Archangel Avacyn, yeah.
Yeah.
I
cast.
I was Rick. At a PTQ. I was at a PTQ at Neutral Ground, which is Luis used to play there too, where a guy got DQ'd, or no, he got game lost for registering his Dark Confidants as Bobs.
Oh,
Bob on his deck red sheet. I remember, like, everybody knows what Bob is. What are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, sorry, we have to. I think they may have changed the rules since then. I think you might even be able to get away with that.
That's
now.
That's so awkward. Like, but, what else could possibly be Bob, too? But I mean, then we're getting into the realm of like Bubarigmos Enraged and Bumarigmos, the other name, the other Bubarigmos, yeah. And that person who got a game loss because they wrote the wrong Bubarigmos on their deck list. Yeah, that's really awkward.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm just saying you've cast plenty of Bobs.
It's true.
Plenty of Johnny. I probably haven't cast plenty of Johnny Magics, but there was a time when you could cast Johnny Magic.
I cast some. I definitely play some. I've never cast Kai before. I don't even know what his card does. It's not very good.
Pay two mana. It's a two mana. I think
it's a four mana 2/2, right?
No, I think it's a two mana. I think it's a 2-mana 2/1, and then you pay two. You can pay one or two blue to sack him to counter a spell.
I have no idea, dude. I honestly don't even know. I am not sure what his invitational card is. I wish they brought invitational cards back. They're so cool.
They kind of did with the champion, right?
Oh yeah, Javier Dominguez is Fervent Champion. He was Fervent Champion, but there hasn't been another one, right? Because there wasn't a Worlds this year.
Mm-mm.
There was a Worlds equivalent, but it wasn't Worlds.
I feel like they're gonna. I feel like that's something they want to get back into because the hunger is there for that.
Oh,
right?
people want it. Really, yeah, so cool.
Think of the name of the Kai card anymore. Jeez,
I don't know what it is. Feels bad, man. You get an invitational card, people don't even remember what it's called.
I feel that. I was gonna ask you, can you name all the invitational cards?
No, I've actually gone through a list of them, and there were a ton that I was like, I did not realize this was an invitational card. That's so cool. Like, I didn't know Snapcaster Mage was an invitational card.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't know.
Avalanche Riders.
Yeah, that's Darwin.
Castle. Mm-hmm. Avalanche Riders. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, a Meddling Mage obviously is a very, very popular one. And then Sylvan Safekeeper is kind of an unknown one.
I know which one that is, but I don't remember who it is.
I can't remember. It's not Sven Gierstein. No, it's... I can't remember who it is either.
Yeah.
And then Rootwater Thief. Rakdos Augur Mage.
I don't know all of them. I have looked into it before just because I thought it was pretty cool, but I...
Void Mage Prodigy. That's Kai. Kai is the Void
Mage
Prodigy.
That's it. Yes, you're right. You're right. That is
there
right.
There we go.
Yeah,
you got it. I think the only one I'm missing is Johnny Magic.
Shadow Mage Infiltrator.
Right? Shadow Mage Infiltrator.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They should bring it back, though. It was an unbelievable thing. It was a great tournament to watch. I mean, it was... No, there's one more. I'm missing one, whatever. It was great, and I wish they'd bring it back. So,
anyway, that was the Black Lotus Jeweled Lotus controversy.
I think we're both fine with it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna play Commander, you know. But I think we're both
I want to wait and see what the Commander players say after a while. But I think from a gameplay perspective, I'm totally okay with this card. And then the only thing that really bothers me about it is that it seems kind of like a money grab. But then also my friends were saying like, hey, this design makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't think it's a money grab. If it's a chase card, that makes a lot of sense the way it was designed, which I think is a very fair point. So I think we're both like cool with it. Speaking of money grabs.
Here we go.
So this week, the Hasbro earnings report came out. That was a really good segue, Masha. It was very smooth. So the Hasbro earnings report is basically the notes that come out of the board meeting when Hasbro is presenting to their investors and stakeholders. And basically talking about how things went for them over this past year. And so there were a couple interesting points that I thought would be cool to highlight here on the podcast. One that came at the surprise of absolutely no one. Arena for Mobile has been postponed for 2021. Weird how that happened. What do you think, Mashi?
Let me ask you this, Gabby. At this point, like, should they just walk away from that?
I think they should just walk away from it. No one thought it was going to come out in 2020, and I still, like, we were joking about it, but we're like, are we waiting for Skewed Mob to rotate? Like, what's the plan? How can they make this in the actual notes, they said that they wanted to give Wizards of the Coast, the company, I think that's how they referred to them, more time to fine-tune the game. And my question is, what are you fine-tuning the game? Like, Skewed Mob does not even, it barely works on desktop. Like, what?
It's unmanageable.
Yeah.
Is it Skewed Mob or Skewed Swarm? Skewed Swarm.
Oh, is it Skewed? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Skewed Mob is the original.
Skewed Swarm. Yes, you're right about that.
Yeah. And it is, I've drafted it. It is ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, the point where you're like, oh my God, I don't know. Wait, which one has summoning sickness? Who's blocking who? Well, I don't know what's happening. I'm winning, but I'm not enjoying this. This is too much for me, right?
So one of the things that I was laughing about, we were talking about this during dinner. We're like, well, how do you get around this? Like, how do you figure out this board state when there's like a ton of blockers and you just need to put blockers in front of stuff? And we're like, oh, I bet they're working on the auto blocker, right?
Auto block feature.
Yes, we were like, the auto block feature is coming, and then you're gonna be like, you know, I was playing my game of Arena and it was all going well, and then I used the auto block feature and the auto blocker screwed me. It's, you know, people are gonna say that, you know, it's coming.
It's totally gonna happen. It would have to be auto block in, trample out.
Yeah, probably like something that tells you, or like, yeah. I can't believe that the auto blocker chose to put a 2-2 in front of their 3-3. Like, this is horrible. I shouldn't have lost this game. When it's like, you should have been playing it on mobile.
Yeah, or put my 3-3 in front of that 1-1 death touch. Like,
yes.
Why would it do that?
Wow, the auto blocker is so bad.
Yeah, I should have blocked the 4-4 if it was gonna die or whatever. But you know, it's, I just think, like, I don't even know if they should be putting the resources into it. Put the resources into improving Arena. Put the resources into, you know, getting more Pioneer sets on Arena. Like, bring out more remastered sets for Arena. You know, have Innistrad drafts on Arena. Do all that to, like, improve Arena as a client on computers. And don't get me wrong, I have an iPad. I have an iPhone. I would love to play on both those platforms. I don't think it's realistic. I think that whatever experience they provide, I will probably try it and then go,
Why would I bother playing Magic on my phone? Yeah.
So stop putting money, time, and resources into that project. It's not a game that's built for that. And by the way, if what they mean is they're like refining the game, as in letting the destination of mobile shape how they develop future cards, that terrifies me. I think it's a very bad move on their part. There's no development of this game. This is honestly, in my opinion, the greatest game ever invented. Without doubt, the greatest trading card game ever, or card game, I should say, ever printed. Like, there is no game development needed anymore. New mechanics, sure, but they've refined that part. So please don't tell me we're refining it to make it somehow palatable for mobile. That is not, I think, what the game needs.
Yes, I agree that is a trend that really scares me, because I think one of the cool things about Magic is cards like Skewed Swarm, right? It's that you can have these like ridiculous games with Skewed Swarm, and like, yeah, you get into these really complicated board states. And there's also a really big difference to me designing with with a client in mind. So one of the things that you'll notice in designs nowadays is a lot of times cards would let you target anything, like deal 2 damage to any target. Whereas now the cards these days get designed differently. They'll say things like that your opponent control, like tap target creature your opponent controls. They won't let you do it to your own stuff, because a lot of times that's where a lot of client problems come in, right? And just to give you a really like example that literally happened to me today, I was playing Innistrad draft, and there's this card called Geist Catcher's Rig. And Geist Catcher's Rig, if you don't remember, it is a 6-mana 4/5 that deals 4 damage to target flyer, and you have to target a creature with it. Okay? It's like, okay, that's not an option. Good. Yeah, it's pretty good. But guess what? It's target anything, not your opponent's control. So I, in the middle of playing a fast game, have 2 cards. I'm flooding out so badly. I have 2 cards in play. It's Geist Catcher Rigs and a 2-1 flyer first strike. And guess what I do? I play Geist Catcher's Rig. I target my flyer and immediately kill it. And that's awful. Like, and that happens because you are forced to target, and then I just click through it too fast and said yes. And I think designing cards that don't do that, so like a thing that says deal 4 damage to target flyer your opponent controls, that will make the whole like experience of me playing on Arena.
It speeds it up too.
It speeds it up. It's going to make it so much better. But that that to me is an acceptable place to make those changes. Like, you're making it so that it plays way better versus we're making the game differently so that you can play it on mobile is like, well, does that mean that cards like Skewed Swarm aren't allowed to exist? And that feels awful to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that there's also a barrier to play entry. I mean, despite the fact you made that error, that's not an error a player of your level is going to make. New players are going to do that all the time. And there are cards. I mean, do you know how many I've drafted Rakdos Party a lot in Zendikar Rising draft? Mm-hmm. The number of times I've been like, wait a minute, this is like, I'll cast Khazul's Fury, which is like a fling, and I accidentally target the creature I plan on sacrificing. It's like, no.
Oh my God. I'm targeting
my opponent and I'm sacrificing this creature. Or Subtle Strike. I think it's always the -1/-1 first and then the +1/+1 counter. And I like triple read that thing. Like, who's getting the -1/-1? Who's getting the +1/+1? Because this has got to work.
It can be really stressful. The first time I played Magic online, it was during Innistrad Standard. And there was a card called Falkenwrath Aristocrat. It's a 4 mana 4/1 Flying Haste. And it has an activated ability. You sack a creature. Falkenwrath Aristocrat gets indestructible until end of turn. And if it was a human that you sacked, it also gets a +1/+1 counter. And the first time I played Modo, the first thing I did was, and I played with Falkenwrath Aristocrat in paper a bunch. I know how it works. I attack, and the first thing I do is sack it to itself. And I'm just like, this is horrible. And I just put Modo down. I put Modo down for years because I was like, this is one of the worst experiences I've ever had. I'm never playing
rage,
this. It was a rage quit. It was a rage quit for years. Yeah. I didn't play Modo because of this. And so I think designing cards where that doesn't, where like that becomes a lot, the interface helps you not make that mistake is good. But I really don't want to see it at the cost of like Magic being a different game, because that removing that removes some of what I love about the game.
Yeah. I mean, already what we're talking about when you target only your opponent's stuff, you're chipping away a little bit at the complexity of the game, because sometimes the right play is to target your own stuff with seemingly negative things, blowing up your own creature, putting a counter on your own creature when you're like, no, you wouldn't normally want to do that. Like, no, but there's something else at stake here and I want to do it. So I think that, you know, but yes, I think we're aligned here. And that's my biggest fear, is I don't want them refining the actual game Magic the Gathering to make it more palatable for mobile. That would be a travesty.
Yeah. There were a few other interesting things from the earnings report. One of the things that they were talking about is basically they were patting themselves on the back, saying that Magic is crushing it. It is a little weird because I feel like a lot of, like, just if you've been in the Magic community, a lot of the decisions and things that have been happening over the last like year and a half plus have been questionable. I think people have had issues with a lot of the stuff, including things like Secret Lair, which, as we mentioned before, is basically business selling to consumer, which is not something that Wizards usually does. Wizards usually sells product to retailers and distributors. And so being like, wow, we're really doing it out here, it feels a little weird to me, even though I understand why this is for an earnings report for a board meeting. Like, obviously, they're going to try to spin all the good stuff that's going on with Magic.
Well, to be fair, Wizards did have a history of selling direct to consumer, but it was always products that were also available at your LGS. Be like, you could buy a box of the latest standard, or probably at the time type 2 set. Mm-hmm. And they also charge full MSRP, which no one in the industry did. So you could go to Wizards and buy it, but you'd pay more there. So nobody did.
So it didn't even make sense really to care. Do it.
Yeah. It's like, okay, fine. If you're going to charge full MSRP and we're all charging like, you know, 25% below that, sell all you want, Wizards of Coast. We don't care. But exclusive stuff, that's really like where the rubber hit the road, right? That's where it went real crazy.
Yeah, that is when I think people also kind of like took an issue with it. The other thing that was interesting is in the earnings report, they did talk about how the rest of the Wizards properties aren't doing so hot. It was basically like Magic and Monopoly were crushing it. They were up 21% versus their other games, and other things were not doing so well. So I also hope, just selfishly, that it doesn't like that they don't see this and they're like, oh, whatever you're doing right now, keep doing more of it. Because like, I don't want to see more Secret Lairs. Those were terrible. I hope they took seriously the complaints that people had, because I think the complaints people had about Secret Lair were real. And there's been just decisions that have happened along the way that feel to me like, hey, this is just, we're trying to sell more stuff, which totally fine with a business doing that. That's the point of a business. But I don't like it when it comes at the cost of having Nexus of Fate like be one of the cards that gets most played, and it's a foil that's supposed to be something you get only when you buy a box, and it just feels like, or Kenrith, the Return King, like these cards that just shouldn't be tournament legal, that are just legal, and the only way you can get them is by buying a box. Like, all of that just feels like so like cheap to me.
And but there is a hidden lesson here, which I we have to take to heart when we're lambasting Wizards, as we often do. I mean, look, poor Gavin's getting blown up over this Jeweled Lotus, right?
Yeah.
It's that Hazard, Hasbro, Mama Hasbro owns Wizards of the Coast. Yeah. Wizards of the Coast is a subsidiary of Hasbro, and Hasbro is failing. Wizards of the Coast is doing well, and Monopoly is doing well, but Hasbro, by and large, and they have IPs like My Little Pony, they own Nerf, they have G.I. Joe.
Transformers, G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
The PJ Masks,
And they're losing money, except for Wizards of the Coast, which does mean that Mama Hasbro, who's in charge, can come knocking on the door at Renton and say, no, you're going to do more of this, guys, because we need to make money. And it's just something we want to keep in mind. Wizards of the Coast, they are answerable to Hasbro. And I wonder how much this stuff, someone saying, hey, guys, I don't think it's a good idea. And they're like, hey, you want to keep the power on here? So you just please do what you're told. And I don't know how much that's happening. Again, I have no idea, but you can see earnings like this, board meetings like this could be an indication that's like, you're supporting the whole company right now.
Yeah. It's on you. Got to make us proud. One of the things that I have heard, like an analogy to the relationship between like Wizards and Hasbro, is that a lot of times Hasbro's been like, oh, you guys are doing well, just keep doing what you're doing. But I think in times that get more difficult, it's a lot more likely that they're coming knocking and saying like, hey, the thing you're doing, you just need you to do it like 3x, 4x. And so they might be getting a lot more pressure. Mm-hmm. And that might be the reason that Omnath didn't get banned the first time. Like that sort of stuff. Clearly there's a lot of moving pieces, and some of them might be like way above anyone's pay grade, where if Hasbro's coming and asking for some of this stuff, they just have to deliver and they might not have a choice sometimes.
Yep. And it's just something as we get our pitchforks and we're sharpening them, we're going out there. It's a good thing to remember, because in times like this, maybe they're not focusing on the products they should be focusing on to develop and make better. They're just focusing on their one beacon of hope, which, hey, it's a game we all play. We have a podcast on it. We've done it for more than a year now. And, there's a lot of people who play this game and are clearly spending money on it. So, but yeah, I don't want it to be, none of us want this beautiful thing that we all participate in, this game we play, this community we're part of, this thing we engage with every day to be, it's okay that it's driven by money because that's what keeps it coming, but for that to take over completely is a scary prospect for all of us. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, and also for the people at Wizards of the Coast. I know a lot of them, that's not what they want either. But reports like this have to scare you for that.
Yeah,
right?
That's, I mean, when I saw this earnings report, I was like, I don't like it.
Yeah, it's good for Wizards, but it's bad for Magic. Yeah. So, well, there we have it, Gabby. Went a little bit long this week. But man, this Jeweled Lotus thing, it just took over. Is this the most commander centric podcast we've ever done on Magic?
I think so. I don't think we've ever had. I mean, maybe like the Secret Layers were a big commander thing too, because that was card availability was a big part of the complaints there.
Yeah, but this one's been our. This is our. There we go. Season two, our commander episode. We got out of the way early. We just took care of it. That's our commander episode for season two of Magic FM. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this week. Don't forget, we do have the CFP Pro Showdown, not this weekend, but next weekend. And we'll talk more about it next week. I am the guy on the left, Moshi Scanlon, at Moshi Scanlon. She is Gabby Spartz, at Gabby Spartz. You can find her at twitch.tv/Gabby Spartz streaming, and she's doing all these spooky holiday streams. So check that out. If we get this up in time, I guess tomorrow might be the last day, but pretty awesome stuff. And I know if you follow Gabby, as you should, on social media, you can see her talking about it all the time. You can find our podcast at Magic FM Podcast. Do keep in mind, if you sign for CFP Pro or make any purchases on Channel Fireball, use that code Magic FM. That supports Gabby and I and this podcast, and we surely do appreciate it. All right, y'all, that's it for this week. We will be back next week. Thanks for hanging. Until next week, be wonderful to yourselves, be wonderful to each other.
Bye-bye.